You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Sorry for getting this one out a little late. It's, well, you'll hear. This one required a little more elbow grease than normal to make it listenable. And that's not because the conversation wasn't excellent. It's just the fact that, well, I'll give you the details. So initially, we were supposed to record a podcast together. We were supposed to record on Sunday the 29th, just normal remote recording style like I usually do. And then I saw a post on Instagram that she put up saying that she was playing Portland the night before. So it was Saturday morning when I saw that, and I was like, well, we got to try to make this happen in real life. That would be silly. So we kind of scrambled around, did some mad dash stuff, got it organized, got it squared away, and then we had a little bit of a problem. On the way up to the venue, we noticed there were a lot of traffic lights that were out, and so I called the manager, the tour manager, and said, hey, I just noticed there were a lot of traffic lights out, you know, within the 5-mile radius of the venue. I was curious if the power was still on at the venue, and he said, yeah, the power is off, so we don't even know if the show's gonna happen. So we were all of a sudden thrown into this weird kind of limbo mode, and also, because the power was out, we didn't have anywhere to really go. They were traveling in a van, the other bands were on their bus and their vans or whatever. I'm not sure what everybody was driving, but there was just nowhere for us to go, and no time to get back to the studio here, because they may, you know, they as you'll hear, they had to play just all of a sudden. So everything did end up working out. But it was kind of like, okay, well, I guess we're going to have to abandon this. And then we figured, let's just jump in the van and do it. I mean, there's generators running, there's all kinds of stuff, but it's not anything that you guys haven't experienced before. Oh yeah, I should also add that my Zoom mobile recorder was just kind of like decided to give me problems that day. And so we were stuck there with minimal, and I mean, as in minimal, I mean just phones, audio equipment, and nowhere to go, and pouring down rain, and no electricity, and it was just kind of a mess. And we also didn't really know what was going to happen. The band wasn't sure if this was all just a waste of time, not the podcast, but the show itself, because, you know, you show up, you don't get to play. I don't know how this works. I'm assuming people don't get paid when that happens, because no show happens, nobody comes in and spends money. I don't know. I'm not really sure the logistics of all that. All I know is it can't be a good thing. And so it was a little bit sketchy there for a minute, but everything worked out in the end. We got to do the podcast, the show went on, and everything was fine. So that's kind of the long story of this episode. Fortunately, it's an extra long episode because of all that. So Not all is lost, and that's what's really important. Oh yeah, big shout out to Nick over at Playback Engineering. He helped clean this up and get it to sound a little bit more better than I was able to. And so, big shout out to him for cleaning that up for us. That helped a lot. So, I'm going to shut up now, because I want to get to this episode, but I just wanted you to understand, I left a bunch of stuff in that normally I might have taken out. So you hear the crew coming and going, and just some of that stuff, and just some rawness to it that normally I would have tried to get out and keep squeaky clean, but I felt like this deserved a certain feel, and I liked how it all sounded together with the background noise and everything. It kind of really, I feel like, helped paint a picture for what was really going on. So without further ado, here is myself, Mr. Justin Porter, Yvette Young, and Portland Rain pitter-pattering on a van while a generator runs in the background. All right, enjoy.
Hello, everyone.
everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Tone Mob Podcast, the show about guitar tone and the people behind it. I'm your host, Blake Weiland, and with me today, I have Vette Young.
Hi.
And Justin Porter.
Yo.
This is one of the strangest podcasting experiences I've had in a while, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
This is crazy. So I'll give a little backstory before we just get into talking gear and nonsense here. But originally this was scheduled for tomorrow, and I noticed that you posted on Instagram that you were here in town today, and I was like, how did that get by my radar? I'm not sure. And so, you know, I was already messaging with your manager, and we made it happen to a venue with no power in the van, just sitting out here in the van talking about nonsense.
Thanks, Lightning.
Thank you.
Yeah. No sound check. I hope if the show does go on, it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, this is going to be crazy.
It should be fine.
We've done stuff like that.
People.
We've literally had shows where we were running late because we had a van issue, so we just drove and parked and loaded our stuff directly on stage and played.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. I'm like, yeah, this is rock and roll.
This is what it's all about,
right?
Yeah,
I used to do
load up and go.
Yeah, I used to do stuff like that all the time, so.
This is a sort of a road you've traveled before then, I'm taking it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's good. It's good to, like, be prepared for anything and not be too reliant on having, like, an hour sound check and all that.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a quiet room.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
We just make, this is what it's all about, you know?
It's cool. Maybe we can make this, like, an ASMR, like.
Oh, we're just getting like, real and really good.
You can hear.
NPR now.
Yeah, like.
We'll freak people out really a whole lot here. So I wanted to talk to you. You know, this is mostly a gear podcast, but I've found out lately that a lot of my listeners aren't necessarily into the same artists and groups as I am. A couple of reviews lately, I found a bunch of artists that I never would have listened to, and I thought we were a little more linked up than we are. So maybe instead of me assuming that everybody knows who I'm talking to and what I'm talking about, maybe you can give a little bit of your backstory and you know, why we're talking today, and you know, what you're doing with the band and all that.
I guess my name is Yvette, and I play in a band called Covet. We're kind of like instrumental, proggy, post-rocky. I don't really know what to call it. It's like math rock, I guess, is what we get put in a lot. And I think that's accurate because we deal with a lot of like compound meter, odd meter stuff. I play guitar in that band. It's guitars, drums, and bass, three-piece. And on the side, I also have, like, a singer-songwriter acoustic project, and I also write piano music.
Yes, cool.
So my instruments are piano, violin, and guitar.
Yes, wow. Right. And a lot of the guys in the Facebook group were asking, they were talking about you had a very classically trained background, but you're obviously not doing classically oriented things now. How have you found, like, ways to blend the two worlds that, like, make a lot of sense to you, or is it kind of an abrupt cutoff between the rock guys and the classic thing, or what have you noticed things there?
I feel like one of the fun things about coming from a classical background is, like, I guess taking things that I like from that genre of music and trying to integrate it into rock music. I remember I watched an interview with one of my favorite composers, Olaf Arnalds. He was saying that he grew up, we have a very like similar background, like he grew up listening to a lot of Chopin and like just in the classical world, his grandparents like, you know, exposed him to that. And I grew up listening to a lot of hymns because I grew up very Christian, and then also a lot of classical music. I played in two orchestras, and I took piano and violin lessons. And one of the things he mentioned in his interview was that he wanted to make classical music seem cool.
Okay.
Because he wanted to, like, blend elements of the rock world and kind of, like, open people's minds up to the classical world, because a lot of people are like, classical music, boring.
Right.
That's what my grandparents listened to.
Yeah, like, where's the drop? Or, like, where's
the drum?
Breakdown?
What's going on?
Yeah, like, I'm, like, falling asleep and stuff. But, I mean, I used to even think that way when I was younger, because I was kind of forced into the classical music scene. And I was a competitive piano player for a while, so, like, they, like, made me interpret Rachmaninoff and like right. would judge me on that, and I hated it because wow. I was just like, yo, like I don't think music should be a competition. I don't think you should assign like these arbitrary numbers to an art form and like grade someone on their interpretation of it. And I think it's just weird to grade someone on their creativity too. Anyway, but yeah, I remember coming from the background and feeling kind of jaded with it, and then when I picked up guitar, I kind of fell back in love with music after hating it for so long. I don't know if anyone has listened to any of my other podcasts, but I kind of touched briefly on how I actually got sick from being in the classical world, from like all the perfectionism and all of the like cutthroatness of that, of the competitive circuit.
Oh, wow.
It made me have a lot of anxiety and a lot of feelings of just like nervousness for not doing something perfectly and being really, really careful about what I make and being kind of more self-conscious about what I put out. It made me sick, and I had an eating disorder for a while from it. And playing guitar got me through that. Playing guitar kind of made me not only fall back in love with music, but I think not to be dramatic, but it literally saved my life because it was like a great outlet for me during that time. And I know this is a huge tangent from your original question.
No, not at all.
But basically to relate it back to the question about classical music and how it, and my background in that and how it affects me now, I no longer hate it. I no longer find it to be like tedious and boring. I actually really admire a lot of the qualities of, in particular, Romantic era music. It's very emotive and there's a lot of dynamics. I think that's what I like about a lot of ambient and post-rock music, is it's also very emotive and very dynamic. And I guess my goal and what I do now is like, I like the technical aspects of like some prog and some like more shreddy stuff, but I find it sometimes to be very homogeneous dynamic-wise. So
right.
I think now I'm thinking about songwriting in terms of dynamics and textures and contrast, and I want to kind of bring that to more technical music. It's like sneaking in odd time signatures and shreddy stuff in a way where you don't even know it's happening. It's like, it's because it still flows, it still makes you feel something. It's like expressive and melodic. Mm-hmm. I think that's like what I take from my background.
That was awesome. That was awesome.
I found also, touching back to like anxiety and everything and how guitar got you through that, I found guitar very therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
Like going through depression and stuff like that,
it
really helps a lot.
Teaching yourself a skill, like I taught myself guitar when I was in the hospital, actually. Mm-hmm. And it was so great because like, you know, a lot of eating disorder stuff, it's like a fixation on, well, it's a lot of feeling inadequate and feeling like you're not in control of your surroundings, so you need something to control. And a lot of people turn to their eating habits or their body, fixating on like things they don't like about themselves physically.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like guitar was great because it took my focus off of that, and it made me feel really confident because I was giving myself a new skill.
Yeah.
And I felt really empowering.
Mm-hmm.
To teach yourself something completely new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will say that I think learning guitar was expedited for me because I have that classical background.
I was going to say, possibly.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing for me was actually my ear. Like, because I went through a lot of like theory training. Like, I have a theory background, but I don't ever use it or think about it. The main thing I took away from that was having a good ear for stuff and ear training. Being able to like hear harmonies and hear what goes where, and being able to hear melody and replicate it immediately, like that's the kind of stuff that really helped me with learning guitar. Because I remember I taught myself just by hearing music and like teaching myself it like note by note, like hearing the intervals and like how certain notes related to others, like trying to find it on the fretboard. It was really fun. It was like solving a puzzle and then like memorizing the puzzle.
Yeah. Right, because it was almost like you already knew what the picture was supposed to be.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Whereas somebody like me who starts from, I think I want to learn Nirvana, it's a little bit different, you know? Like,
yeah.
So you probably, like, because you have went headfirst into the rock scene, you probably have integrated with a lot of musicians that don't really have the same background as you, but end up being really incredible kind of nonetheless. Is there a difference you find between like somebody with your technical knowledge and somebody who didn't start that way, you know, but both end up kind of at the same proficiency level? Is that, if that question makes any sense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. One thing I definitely take for granted is my ear. Like, I feel like a lot of people maybe take a little longer to, I see it in a band context all the time. Like, I guess, like, sometimes when I'm writing music, like, I write for the band, like, every song kind of starts with my voice first. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of come with a skeleton, and they put the meat and fat on the bones. But I kind of see it with that, because I already hear, like, a bunch of things, and sometimes it takes other people who don't have a classical background a little longer to, like, be able to find the note that fits and to be able to hear the ideal harmony there, or I don't know, to even be able to hear where a melody is supposed to go. Like, how I write is, like, I sing a lot. I sing the thing I want to write, and mm-hmm. then I just find it on the fretboard and I play it. So I come from a completely, like, it's actually like an untrained, like, I'm trained in some ways, like, my ear is super trained, but the way I approach the fretboard is completely untrained. Like, I don't know shapes. I don't really think about chord structure. I don't think about scales at all. I'm just, like, literally, like, la 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 la, and then I, like, find it.
Oh, wow.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's
fascinating. It's really weird. Like, it's cool because it's like, okay, the reason I started doing that was because I feel like for everyone, your voice is the most immediate instrument you have. Like, you don't have to translate it through a bunch of filters. Like, what you sing and you say with your voice is the most, it's like the most immediate thing that you have, and you don't have to, like, figure out how to get it. It's just, like, already right there in front of you. And sometimes I feel like the best melodies are the ones that you can sing, and they're the most memorable because it flows.
Okay.
It's, like, natural. Yeah. Like, what you wouldn't, like, you know, you wouldn't sing, like, I don't know.
Like a pentatonic scale.
I'm trying to think of something hard to sing.
I mean, that's true. Yeah, you wouldn't do that.
And the pentatonics are cool. Like, sometimes it's, like, what I'll do is I'll first start with what I sing, and then I'll make little adjustments here and there mm-hmm. to, like, make it more interesting. So I'll start with something really bare bones, building a melody. Like, I'll start with something, like, super simple. It can even be an interval. Mm-hmm. Like, just, like, maybe switching from, like, you know, a perfect fifth to, like, I don't know, like, major third or something. Like, just, like, playing around with that. And then I'll vary it up, and I'll start out with something in... Oh, another thing about singing a melody is that oftentimes, I don't know why, I think this is probably also maybe my upbringing with playing stuff that's a little weird meter, like Prokofiev or something, but also listening to a lot of prog and math rock growing up in college, is some of the things I sing, I don't even think about, like, time signatures or anything. I just, like, hum a melody, and, like, I'm like, ooh, this grooves, and then I play it, and then I bring it to practice, and then I think it's in four this whole time, and then I play it with my drummer. He's like, this isn't in four. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right, like, I guess I snuck, like, a bar of five in there, something, like, yeah. Or, like, this is actually, like, yeah, like, it's in seven, and then there's, like, you can, like, phrase it in four, but it makes more sense to, like, phrase, yeah, I don't know, it's weird. So a lot of times, like, naturally the things I write with my voice end up being kind of, like, groovy, but the cool thing, mathy, mm-hmm. but the cool thing about that is, like, it's not trying to force that to happen. I feel like a lot of odd meter stuff sounds a bit disjointed, because it's, like, it's almost like writing with theory knowledge first, and, like, trying to force, like, a time signature shift to happen, mm-hmm, and it doesn't feel natural. But then for me, again, like, I like music to flow. Like, a lot of classical music, particular romantic era music, flows really well.
Yeah.
And I love that. Like, Ravel, he writes stuff that just sounds like water, and I love that. And it's not always in four, and I think when you write with your voice, you can write stuff that's kind of, like, odd meter without it intentionally having it be, like, really tricky to count. It just happens to be not in four. So, yeah,
I don't think I've ever intentionally thought about a time signature when writing a song.
Yeah.
But I think they still somehow always come out in four.
Just really? Like,
yeah, I don't know. But,
it's,
you know,
it's probably because, like,
it's a punk rock thing, probably.
Yeah, you know? It has a lot to do with what you listen to. Because, mm-hmm. like, I tell a lot, like, I teach guitar sometimes on the road, and a lot of people are like, how do you even approach writing an odd meter? And in order to start, like, I always suggest listening to a lot of stuff that's disjointed. So I give them, like, examples of bands. And then I always give them exercises, like, okay, you need to just internalize, like, that shift, like, shifting from five to four, or shifting from five to seven, or shifting from three to five, or something. Like, you need to, like, just teach yourself how to feel that, mm-hmm. and then once you have that down, it's easier. Like, you do it artificially. Like, I usually give them a chord to finger pick, and then I have them pick, like, maybe pick one version of it in 3 and one version of it in, like, 5. And okay. Then I have them, like, alternate, or, like, 5 or 7. I'll just, like, choose, like, an arbitrary time signature and have them, like, internalize that. And once they know how to feel that, it's easier to vary up the melody and to do something else.
Got it.
It's weird. It's like you got to establish the rhythm first.
So
interesting.
Beyond your, like, technical playing abilities, people are also, and what I guess listeners to this show would probably be most interested in, is your tone is also out of control good. Everyone kind of, at least in our circle of nerds, is like, oh, her guitar sounds are great.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Like, yeah. Really, like,
that's a huge compliment.
I mean, they really are. Like, that's true. Was one of the first things that struck me, was like, wow, she's a great player, and also, whoa, like, what are we, oh. Some peeping on us. It's not like this is weird. This is totally normal. Yeah. Three
sitting
people
in,
talking
in a van.
Van. That's normal.
Yeah. thank you,
but
everyone.
Yeah, they just, I mean, it sounds great. But you seem to be one of those people that straddles the line, and I don't know if this is something that's visible to you, but there's definitely a line sort of between people who care more about chops and who care more about tone, it seems like, overall
yeah.
sound of the notes.
Mm. Yeah.
You seem to have found a happy place with both people. So what is your gear looking like these days?
Well, first, I'd like to share that's really cool to hear, because I actually, for the longest time, I was self-conscious about tone, because I started playing acoustic guitar and I knew nothing about electric guitar, and I never, like, there's just so many pedals out there. There's so many, like, conflicting opinions of what tone, what good tone is. Like, some people are like, oh, humbuckers for days, and some things like, oh, like P90, like, you know, I remember just getting bombarded with different people telling me what I should buy at first.
Of course.
Like, different dudes being like, oh, I think for your sound you should get this, and I, like, you know, I just didn't know who to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, like, kind of lost for a while, and I knew what I didn't like. I think at first I started with some EMGs that were really compressed sounding. I think they're really active pickups, and so I just felt like they were just really compressed and I couldn't get any dynamics out of them. But I get, like, why someone else would want to use them. For me, it was just, I like the kind of music I wanted to play is, like, very dependent on touch, because I never use a pick. That's an important detail. I never use a pick.
Mm-hmm.
I only use fingerstyle and, like, tapping and stuff. So for me, I need to rely a lot on, like, getting attack with, like, the pads of my fingers, and, like, be able to lay back and have it sound, like, more clean. And, like, if I dig in, getting a little more, like, overdriven sound.
Oh,
so
yes.
Yeah, so that means a lot. I think, yeah, I got here by a lot of trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of just playing with knobs at home. Like,
well, that's the best way.
That's the best way.
That's, like, people are like, oh, no, you need this, or oh, no, you need that. And really the best thing to do is just sit at home and
mm-hmm.
work with what you have and find what you like.
Yeah. There's some pedals where it's like, yeah, seriously, the best thing you can do is just plug in and play with, like, a toy. Like,
yeah.
Crank it all the way up, see what it does to your tone, crank it all the way down, do that with every single knob,
yep.
A and B certain things, and, like, make marks for where you like it. That's, like, how I deal with gear. But there's some pedals where it's like, oh, you do need the manual, because, like,
yeah.
If you hold down this button unlocks a secret mode, and then
oh, yeah.
There's actually
yep.
a hidden
it's a real thing, like the ghost
of Elvis Presley will actually come out. Yeah, it's like, okay. And then there's some pedals where I'm just like, how did I get here? I can't get it to do the original thing anymore.
I better save that preset, because
yeah,
I don't remember how it works.
Yeah. More and more I'm like, okay, so more and more I divide my gear into gear that I use for live stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that is not the secret Rubik's Cube
mm-hmm.
pedals where it's like an unlock stuff, because I find that stuff gets really messed up in transit sometimes, and things glitch out a lot live, and I can't afford to deal with, like, a problem.
Yeah.
With,
uh-oh,
like,
yeah. Soundtrack time.
Oh, is
we
it?
We gotta go.
Is it?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well.
Sorry, guys. Power's back.
Okay.
All right.
Wait, can we bookmark this in after?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can, we'll just stop it there.
Okay. Sorry.
Look it out.
And in the interest of keeping this audio experience as close to the real deal as possible, I'm going to put a clip in right now that's just a short 20-second clip of the band sound checking, and then we will continue the rest of the podcast. But I thought this was a good opportunity for some of you who haven't had the chance to check her or her band out, and this will give you just a little taste of what we mean when we're kind of using some of these weird descriptor terms we use to describe their playing. So here you go.
All right. Okay, so we're back in the van.
Back in the van.
We're having a very jarring evening around here. This has been crazy, but they just played their set. They sounded great. They're killing it.
Thank you.
And Jess and I were standing in the back like old men trying to come to terms with the fact that we are now old men at rock shows and having to stand in the back.
Yeah, well, you know, it
sounds
it
better back
comes
here.
With, you know, comes to everybody at some point.
Well,
Also, so during the show, I decided that you guys are either aliens or robots. Because I don't think any human can do that kind of amazing stuff.
So. Oh, that's too sweet.
It was great.
It was blowing my mind.
Hang on, I have to charge my battery.
Oh, yeah. Right.
That's right, we're in the van. Let me get your cord.
Beep, boop.
We'll start up. No, that was incredible. And you made a joke after we hopped out, like, wouldn't it be funny if my tone wasn't very good based on that last question?
Yeah, it was funny. It'd be really funny if you, like, hyped me up, and then it was just, like, terrible.
It wasn't terrible.
That, I can honestly say that did not happen.
Aw, thanks.
It sounded incredible.
Yeah, it was great.
Thank you. I got some gems on my board right now that are, like, my ride or die.
Nice. Ooh. Well, that was the line of questioning we were following. Uh-huh. Let's get back into that. So you were talking about how you were a little unsure about your tone because you
initially
didn't know about all the stuff. There's so much stuff to know, but where did you go from there?
So people told me a bunch of conflicting things, and then, you know, at the end of the day, you can read anything on the internet. You can read opinions on the internet, you can, like, get opinions from other people, but at the end of the day, like, you know what sound you want. So I just tried a bunch of stuff. Sometimes, like, you know, at first I tried, like, active pickups, and I wasn't, like, a huge fan. And then I moved on to a set of single coils. I think right now I'm using Seymour Duncan, the 5-2 Strat set, and Ibanez Talman Prestige, and that's like my, I think I love that. Like, that is like my golden combination right now.
It's
that
such
into
a cool guitar.
An AC30, like, I really like AC30s, because at first I played through a Deluxe Reverb a long time ago, and I found that, like, I didn't get quite enough headroom, but then with the AC30, I just, something about the way it reacts with the pickups, like, it just breaks up in just the nicest way. Like, if you play really delicately, it's like really a nice crystalline clean tone, but if you, like, dig in, you can also, I use the top boost feature, so I can, like, mess with, like, the treble and bass a bit, but it breaks up in a really, really nice way, especially playing, like, minor seconds or, like, sometimes bending things a little dissonant. Like, it just sounds really cool. That's like my go. Like, a lot of people ask me what my rig is on Instagram, because on my videos they like the tone there, and I'm proud to say it's just direct into amp. Like, I don't run usually. Nice. If I'm not doing a pedal demo, if it's just clean, I'm just Seymour Duncan 5-2 Strat set into an AC10 with just a smidge of a built-in reverb, and I find that's like my favorite sound. Like, I don't play with a compressor at home. I don't practice with a compressor. I feel like it makes me coast a little too much, and it makes it, like, it smooths it out a little too much, so that I want to be able to play it. I've had shows where all my pedals die and I just go direct into amp.
Right.
And, like, everything I write, I always want to make sure that if something like that happens, I still can play songs, like, just direct into amp, and it's not going to be a disaster. That saved my life a few times. But yeah, so that's, like, you know, my baseline rig. And then right now on my board, so I think I was getting into this earlier. So I divide my pedals into, like, two categories. Mm-hmm. The complicated ones with a lot of settings and a lot of secret modes and stuff, I like using the studio tools. I also have some pedals that are just great noise generators, like the Rainbow Machine. It can be a really great tool for texture in the studio. I have the Mantic Flex, which is another really interesting, noisy pedal. I'm definitely going to try to play with that on the on the new record, which we're going to record soon.
Oh.
Got the Maris Auto bit, which is a really fun. I have one setting on there that's like pretty melodic, but everything else is like cool glitch noise that I'm also planning to play with. So there's, you know, studio tool pedals, and then there's pedals that I just use on my board.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'll go through. Do you want to hear about my live board? What I use tonight?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. This is for the nerds.
All right. So I'll just divide it by kind of pedal. Okay. So got a tuner. I'm just kidding.
What kind of tuner?
I think this is a polytune.
All right.
It's funny. I had a
A lot of people use that.
Yeah, I had a pitch black that everyone like gave me shit for, and then like the knob like sunk into the enclosure one show, so I had to buy a polytune. It was cool. I know my bass player swears by the Sonic Research. Is that called Sonic Research?
Mm-hmm.
The strobe tuner.
Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Strobe tuner. At first, this freaked me out. I was like, I don't get it. But then I don't know. Like, I get it now. I think I still like using like a non-strobe style tuner just because it's easier for me to see. It's like fast. I read it faster.
Mm-hmm.
And like when I'm tuning live, I need it quick. And then I have, let's see, tone sculpting things. I have an EQ pedal. I have an MXR 10 band EQ. That one's useful because, so in my set, I'm currently working on it, but I have a, the Strandberg that I play, the 7-string has a Sur, 7-string set, they're humbuckers. So it's like a very, very different tone than the single coils that I run with my Talmans. And I use the EQ pedal to essentially kind of compensate for some of the, I lose a lot of brightness with the humbuckers, and I find that they're more bassy. So I kind of just like push certain brighter frequencies up, and then I like tone down the lower frequencies. And it kind of just helps smooth out the radical shift in tone when I like when I switch guitars, and so the sound person doesn't have to compensate as much. So there's that, and it's also useful for when a venue's like it just some venues just sound different. So if I need to like sometimes I clash with David, my bass player. So sometimes I like to use the EQ pedal to like kind of like boost some of my highs so I don't like lose myself in his mix. And then I have I'll go on to gain distortion kind of stuff. I have a longsword.
John.
Yeah, John is awesome.
He's so good.
He's so nice. I love that pedal. He gave it to me. Should we pause?
Yeah, that's okay. Oh, we got company. Just all a right. second, guys. Yep. So I'm telling you guys, we really are in a van. We're not making this up. This is real stuff.
That's true.
Hey, guys. David.
Sorry. We have to load.
Oh,
do we need to get out?
Dude.
Okay.
It's okay. We can roll. Here, let's just shut it down.
No. Oh, no. You have to get out. They're just talking.
Sorry, guys. Oh, okay.
It's okay. Time to load stuff up.
I'm telling you. People don't believe that we're really sitting in a van outside of a concert venue. But
recording
really
on phones.
The highest of technology. Thanks for going down, portable recorder.
Okay, I think we're good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
We're all synced, so we can just split some of that out.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I have the longsword. He gave me that on our last tour, and I didn't get to try it until after tour. And then I use it for more of like... not a clean boost, but I use it to push my cleans even more to break up. I don't really use it on, like, the full gain setting. And I find that just that little bit is enough to, like, I don't know, break up. Just, like, get my tone to break up a bit.
Yeah.
And then also I really like the EQ, too. Like, you can use it to, like... I find that some other gain pedals are, like, overdrive pedals. I get kind of muddy.
Yeah.
So I really, really like, or it sounds really thin all of a sudden. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Sorry if I sound really ignorant.
You don't at all. No, you're using all the right words.
Okay, yeah. Like, I'm new to this, and I did this. I literally learned all of this by trial and error and, like, just asking my friends and reading a little bit. about stuff. So sorry if I ever am unclear or nebulous in the way I describe.
No. Unclear and nebulous is the name of the tone description game.
It's
so you're
pretty much. Yeah. Everyone's really nebulous and unclear. Like,
well, it's because you're trying to describe sound.
Sound.
It's
yeah.
like really trying to describe hard. Color like, with no reference.
You know,
point.
It's like fluffy. It's like, you know, crispy and then like fluffy. Like, yeah, it's like I don't know what you mean. Like,
I've always thought about it like the like if you're trying to describe like turquoise to somebody who doesn't know what blue and green are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's why this describing sounds is so hard, you know?
Yeah. Like, everybody's like, oh, it sounds, like you said, like, fluffy and crispy. Or like, somebody else will be like, what do you mean? It sounds like harsh and
it's
like,
just
bright.
So subjective. So yeah. don't ever worry. If it sounds like, in your head, that sounds like an accurate description, that's the accurate description.
Yeah.
Just go with that.
Okay, yeah. Sometimes just I find that it sounds all of a sudden very thin and it lacks body. Mm-hmm. So... like, I find the longsword, I really crank the bass, like, all the way up, and it just sounds, like, really fat, and it has, like, more body to it. But then I also, like, I'm able to, like, control how clear it is as well, which is really nice. Like, I feel like I really like that. Some overdrive pedals don't give you as much control in that. And then I have this, from Ground Control Audio, I have the Amatera Su Bright preamp. It's a bright preamp, but I really like it on... there's, like, a bright setting and a dark setting, and it kind of is, like... I use it for, like, big open chords or, like, singular lines where, again, it's, like, kind of, like, pushing my cleans a little bit.
Right.
Like, more of, like, a clean boost. And then in terms of... oh, I have a fuzz pedal I mentioned earlier that I use, is Evex Mastertron.
Yeah.
It's nice because, again, you can, like, control how much... it's not like affecting the fuzz all the way. You can control how much of your clean signal is like blended with it. I appreciate that. I still have to spend more time admittedly with it. I just use it on like one kind of more like it's not a solo. I guess my whole set is like a solo. But, like it's like a more like lead guitar section. And it's kind of nice because it adds some like sass and like attitude to like that one line. I find that it's better it tracks better monophonically, so it's like if I play like chords it gets kind of muddy, but so I had to like alter my part a little bit, but it's like it adds like so much body to it, and like I don't know, I like it. Yeah, again, I'm not describing it with like the most clear
it works. No, I totally understand what you're saying.
Okay.
You're not being any more unclear than any other guest.
okay
it's all good.
Again, I'm new to this.
Well, you tricked me.
Thank you. And then okay, so Walrus Audio, I have two of their pedals. I have the Fathom, reverb.
Yeah.
And then I have the Julia, which is my absolute favorite.
So good.
I love that pedal.
I love the chorus vibrato. Like it's so versatile. Like you can crank it all the way and have it be like complete vibrato, and then you can like do the in between blend, which is what I do for most of the sections. I like that warble, but I don't want to fully commit to the seasickness. So it's like, yeah, and then you can just it's a really lush chorus, and it's such a versatile, great pedal. And I used to have the Zvex Lo-Fi Junkie, and I also love that pedal. Like it's amazing, but I found that on my live board with all of the compression I run, everything, it just is very noisy. So like it would just emit this like hum that was sometimes too loud to just ignore. So I use it as a studio tool now. I really like it. It's like all over the Zvex Lo-Fi Junkie is like all over our last record.
Love
it.
Oh wow, nice.
Anyway, in terms of and I recently purchased, it's not on my board, but so I have like I swapped out my pedals on my board. In terms of what our set list is, so we have like an indie board, and then I have like a metal board.
Oh,
so the metal board has all of the gain and overdrive, and then like the indie board has all of like the modulation, like kind of like chorusy reverb stuff. Okay. And so I bought the Caroline FX Somersault. I love that thing. It's so great.
Caroline and Philippe are podcast favorites.
I love that company. They make so much cool stuff.
Such cool stuff. Philippe's an amazing, amazing, intelligent human, too. So,
yep.
Oh, hello.
Hey,
how's it going?
Oh, the crew's in here.
Hey.
Sorry.
Oh, no worries.
I'm just looking for a place to put my wet, soggy clothes.
No worries.
That's totally fair.
That's a good spot.
I feel like I'm invading your home, so I'm sorry about that.
No, you're my guest. I should have made coffee and put the whole spread out.
No, it's fine. You played a killer show instead, so...
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was a wild show. I can't believe we even played.
Yeah, dude.
I didn't think it was going to happen.
Oh, that's got to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, me too.
That's awesome.
I'm just going to hang this behind you so we can dry.
No worries.
Totally cool.
Alrighty,
see ya.
Later.
Okay, yeah, Philippe and Caroline Guitar. Yeah, that company makes some really neat stuff. I tried out the Somersault on a Reverb demo. Oh, sorry, no, Chicago Music Exchange demo.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And I liked it so much, I was just like, yo, can I buy one of these things, like, afterwards? Mm-hmm. So that's another, I don't know, there's also, I got the, what is it called? Oh, I'm blanking on these names. Demidash Effects has this, what is it called? Oh my god.
The T120?
T120,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That one's also really great.
Anybody that uses names on or numbers and letters, I get confused.
Dude,
so
I can't remember.
If he wasn't literally the last podcast I published,
really?
I would not have remembered that.
He's awesome too. Yeah, he makes this really cool, like the tape echo pedal. I'm definitely going to try to play with that and use it in the studio too. I got some really cool sounds out of that.
Nice.
So that's that's my modulation. Sorry, I was going to say, like, I'm going to focus on what I have on tour, but I like went into the tangent.
That's perfect.
It's all gear talk.
Okay.
We don't care.
Okay. Okay. So that is the modulation side. And I mentioned the Reverb. I mentioned that I have the Fathom. I have the Maris Mercury 7. It is my favorite reverb that I've ever flipping heard. Like, it is just like, it is so lush and beautiful. I use that for I actually, the reason I have two delays on my board, a lot of people ask me why, is because I prefer one of them to be more short-tailed, and then I prefer one to be more like more of like a ethereal lush, like wide long tail reverb. And I don't, because I don't like switching, having to like switch knobs in between stuff,
because
I'm busy tuning. So yeah, that is why I have two reverbs. And also one of them, actually both of them have this function where if you like, there's a hold thing, so you can like play something and then just like infinite sustain it, which is really awesome. So I use that for in between songs when I'm trying to not have awkward silence. Okay, so that is reverb. Am I missing anything? Oh, compression, of course. Earthquaker, Warden. I really like that pedal. It's just, it's very straightforward. I think it's an optical compressor. So
I've never played the Warden, but everyone that owns one that I know is like, this is a very underrated compressor, and people need to try it. I haven't played one yet.
I have that, and then what is the Deep Six? Is that the
Walrus?
The Walrus one. I like that one as well. I use that one at home sometimes. I haven't gotten a chance to try it out in a live, in like a stage setting. It's weird. Sometimes effects like at a low volume at home don't translate as well when you're like in a venue and you have to like, again, like the ZVEX Lo-Fi Junkie, love the pedal. Just when I'm at a really high volume, it's a bit noisy.
Yeah.
And I don't like, personally, I'm not a huge fan of gating my stuff because I find that it does affect my tone. It's kind of hard to, and a lot of people like give me crap for like my single coils, just like the hum and all of that. But I like it. Like,
I do too.
I'm kind of the same way.
If it's really quiet, okay, for instance, like my Strandberg, the humbuckers are super quiet. It makes me feel weird, like I'm not playing an instrument.
Or something's not plugged in.
Yeah, something's not plugged
in.
And honestly, I really love, like, the people are thinking I'm nuts, but I love the way it fills out the sound too. And like, it kind of like, there's no like deafening silence. It's just like it has character to it, which I like. Again, I'm being very nebulous and abstract.
I'm mentally fist bumping you.
Okay,
right now.
No, swag. Totally,
yeah.
Swag.
I love it. No, I only use gates when I'm doing like chugga chugga.
Yeah.
You know, metal stuff. That's the only time I ever have much of a use for them, because I'm like, I like the noise.
Yeah, I like it. I love it, actually.
Part of, you know, like letting things ring and then me fiddling with knobs. Like, that's like part of how I play now. And so I'm like, the noise isn't a problem for me most of the time. It has been. There's been times where it's that's like, you know, in your situation with the ZVEX.
Yeah, when you don't have clean power to menu, like that can be an issue.
Yeah. But, you know, just a little bit of noise from single coils and lights, it's like, it's okay.
Yeah, it's totally cool. Some people, I think people who come from the other school where they want everything to be very like sterile and clean, like I think that freaks them out. So it's just like, I get it. Different
strokes for different folks, and I happen to be in team like single coil, huh?
Yeah. Bet's on my team.
Yeah. It's funny, and I come from like I listen to like punk, and I listen to a lot of like emo and stuff, and that like, you know, that style of music isn't polished, isn't super clean. There's like grit. There's like, you know, some, they don't even track to a click sometimes. I think that's so cool. Yeah. I love that. I love that like the feel is there, the expression of this character.
Adds a little bit of humanity.
Yeah, I love that. I think music. I mean, music can be whatever, right? Like, but I personally prefer when the music that's, you know, has a bit of character, has a bit of like personality and like humanity.
A little flow.
Yeah.
See, she's not a robot, Jess.
I'm not a robot.
That's true.
Or maybe I was programmed to say all of this to throw you off.
Now still saying alien.
I don't know what to believe now.
Man. Okay, so there's the compressor. And I was talking about how I'm not a huge fan of gating my sound. But I get the application of a gate. And I totally understand why people would want one. Am I forgetting anything? I feel like I am. Oh, of course, my delay. Okay, I have an Avalanche Run, one of my other absolute favorite delays from Earthquaker.
That's a party.
Love the swell setting. Oh, I love how it delays. It makes it so that the attack is like there's like no attack. It's like basically like a, it's like if you were to turn your knob, like it kind of does that.
Yes.
So I love that. I'm definitely going to use it on the new recording. Mm-hmm. And then I have the Carbon Copy Deluxe.
Oh, yes.
I'm really happy they put a tap tempo in. That is great. I think all delays should have a tap tempo. I don't know.
I think it would make it easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm one of those weirdos, though, where like I don't use delay in a rhythmic way as much as some people. It's more of a wash. And so I'm like, tap's great. Or not.
Yeah. You know? And for a wash setting, that's like super cool. Mm-hmm. I actually use the Avalanche Run. Actually, I use it both ways. And for the Carbon Copy, I kind of use it as like a echo, like almost it's like I want it to like syncopate with like what I'm playing.
Yeah.
So I use it in a very specific rhythmic way. So that's why I appreciate the tap tempo there. But God, it is such a good delay. Like I think it's like an analog delay, isn't it?
It is. MXR is an analog, which is makes it extra special. I think I'm an analog delay junkie, so. Yeah. There's just something to the decay of analog repeats. Mm-hmm. It's very natural to me.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of not like a tape echo, but sort of in that vein.
Yeah.
But more controllable and predictable than a tape echo. That's what I like about it.
Again, like it has like character and personality to it. Mm-hmm. I like that you can choose to like kind of like modulate it a bit. So it's like, not perfect every time. I also, I recently played at the studio last time we recorded. I played with the Garouche Echo Sex. I think it's it's an echo pedal. It has a tube preamp in it, which caught my eye. I was like, that's so cool. Like,
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, there's like a little window and you watch it light up. Like, it's a very cosmetic thing. I was like,
tubes.
Yeah, and then it's awesome. I think it's supposed to like imitate the actual degradation of like the Benson the echo rec and it's cool because you can like it has this knob called like age of damage.
I think
that sounds so metal.
That'd be a great metal band name.
Age of damage.
it's a cool. It's like it's such a small little company, but they make like it's huge. It's a huge unit. So maybe not a tour tool, but again, it goes on my studio board. Mm-hmm. I really like it. Has a lot of character to it. Like the way that it decays is like really beautiful and like, that's. I think that's everything on my board. Yep.
That's impressive.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
Sorry, again, I talked your ear off.
How dare you talk on a podcast?
I'm so excited to talk about all this. Like, I still love music despite playing it for some.
Right.
That's the weird thing about it, right? Is it tends to not really go away.
Yeah.
The love is there.
And the more I feel like I've learned so much the past year, just every time I tour, every time I do a demo, I am a huge fan of doing pedal demos actually, because I feel like it forces me to really study what I'm doing and to really be intentional and deliberate about the way I'm using it. So it's like, for me, I view them as like a learning experience for myself. And I have this thing I do on Instagram where I discover a setting I really like and then I share that setting with people. And I find that it makes it less intimidating to approach it when like someone else shows you a setting and like they explain how they got there.
Yes.
So I feel like for me, it's really fun. This whole thing is a learning experience. It was intimidating to me at first because I was like, oh, there's like so many knobs and like, you know, again, like gender is also a factor because I feel like there's not a lot of like girls who talk about this kind of stuff, and like there are, but like I feel like it's definitely like sometimes I felt like, oh my gosh, like guys understand this more. But then now I'm realizing that nobody really super understands it. Everyone's just like,
I'd say guys are kind of dumb.
Yeah.
If we've tricked you into thinking we know what we're doing, that's not.
Yeah.
No, no. But
I didn't mean to.
It's part of the reason I wanted to get you on the show is like I like talking to any kind of musician, anybody who's interested. But I'm tired of talking to only dudes.
Yeah. I mean, I think
a different perspective, you know.
Exactly. And I'm like fully transparent in the fact that like I'm not like an expert on this. I really got here just by trial and error and just by like figuring out what I like and what I don't like. And so I feel like the more I learn about this stuff, the more excited I get to like talk and like learn more from other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is probably a good point, not to make an awkward segue, but we have some questions from the Facebook group.
Okay.
If you are interested.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know there was a Facebook group.
There was some Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's go.
There's some excited stuff. Let's see how many... this is a valid question because I'm sure a lot of people ask you this. How many times a day, Emilio Rizzo wants to know, how many times a day does she hear, when I watch you play, I want to quit playing guitar?
Oh, that comment always makes me sad because I'm like, I don't want to do that. Like, my whole thing is music for me has been such an incredible outlet and like I'm really timid and shy by nature, but I feel like playing guitar has really pulled me out of my shell because I have to be in front of people. And it's like, I feel like it's been such a healthy, productive outlet for me. And when people are like, no, I want to quit after you, I'm like, no. Like, that's not my, I'm not here to like compete with you. I'm not trying to like flex on you. I'm trying to like be like, yo, this is fun, like
kind of like a, hey, look what you can do too.
Yeah, yeah. Like the water's warm, jump in.
Yeah, right.
Like, come on, let's do it.
Come on,
like we can all do this.
Yeah,
this
thing. Like, I kind of go back and forth on that. Like sometimes I watch somebody, I'm like, I might as well just quit now, but then I'm like, I kind of want to do that though.
It's like, I mean, I'll say that as a joke.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But it's like, if I haven't quit by now,
yeah,
it's probably not gonna happen. You know, it's and I don't think anybody actually means that seriously.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's probably weird to hear it because that's never going to be said to me, but it's probably weird from your angle to hear it because it's like, that's a strange compliment.
I'm always like, please don't, like, that's what I just take it literally. I don't know what else to say.
All right, let's see. We actually covered a lot of this.
Have
like a bunch of questions. I was like, well, we talked about that and
amazing.
That so one of our main guys and a moderator in the forum, Mr. Jason Fuzzmonger.
Fuzzmonger.
Yo.
Yeah.
Is that his real last name?
I wish. It's not, and I won't.
I like to pretend that
I won't out it publicly, but yeah, it's what is. That's his name he has to use on social media for work reasons.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. He just wanted you to know that his 4-year-old daughter is interested in guitar partially because of her, of you.
Aww.
Yeah. So there you go.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. I love when kids, like, Because honestly, okay, I think I'm going to give a little parenting spiel. I'm not a parent. I shouldn't give advice on parenting. But I feel like the best thing you can do for your kid is to just expose your kid to, like, a bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see what they latch on to.
Yeah.
Me, I was forced into music, so at first I hated it.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Like, really hated it.
That makes me sad.
I know. I mean, like, because I said that I came from, like, the, you know, I was being forced to do competitions and stuff, and I just didn't think it was, like, fun anymore. But then, you know, playing guitar made me fall back in love with it. I feel like that was because I came to music on my own terms and it wasn't shoved down my throat.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's beautiful that she like naturally just wants to play guitar.
I think whether you're a parent or not, that's just good advice.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't know about the things that, you know, my parents didn't necessarily expose me to things themselves, but they didn't keep things from me.
Yeah.
So it was like, I'm like, I want to listen to Unearth. And they're like, we don't really know what that is, but okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, and they let me, you know, have enough, you know, I mean, they didn't let me do whatever. They were good parents. You know, they didn't let me do whatever.
Yeah.
I wanted, I'd be dead.
Mom, I want a tattoo of a minion.
Right.
No, son.
It's bad.
You're going to regret that.
But they let me have enough leash to get exposed. So it's like, oh, no, these are the things I'm into. You know, I think that's just really good.
Yeah.
Good things, you know, gave me enough rope to hang myself, I guess. So,
absolutely.
I feel like that's a good way to go about it.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's something we didn't really touch on too much. Travis Vandell, and I don't know if I'm saying your name right, Travis, so correct me if
it's Vandel. I don't know. Vandel.
Vandel.
Vandel. Yeah. It could be.
It's totally Vandel.
Going with Vandel. There's two L's. That's the only reason.
It gotcha. Sounds like a MySpace name, like Travis Vandel.
I'm Travis Vandel. XOXO.
Yeah.
His doesn't have that. His has a coffee cup next to it because he's a conversation starter. Oh. Shout out to conversation starter Travis.
Yo.
Amazing props.
He wants to know what you would mention your writing process where you are the one that kind of brings it to the band.
Uh-huh.
And how you kind of vocalize these things. So you just vocalize, play, bring to band, or is there more to that?
Yeah, so basically I start with, okay, I use Instagram as kind of a way to incentivize myself to finish songs. Sometimes.
Okay.
So it's interesting because, okay, I could talk about this forever, but I think social media is like super toxic because it makes people compare themselves to others and it makes people fixate on all these little details that don't. That shouldn't matter. Like, it becomes more of a popularity contest and all that. So it's like, it's tricky because you got to play the game but not get like sucked into the game. You know what I mean?
Totally.
So I use it as a way to like encourage myself to finish songs. Because when I write a riff, I'm like excited. Sometimes, okay, so we didn't get into this yet, but I'm like really excited to talk about this.
Okay, let's do it.
Sometimes gear will pull a riff out of me. Like, sometimes like I will be sent like a delay pedal or something, and then I'll write something that I would never write on my own, like with no gear. Like it's almost like it gives me a color to work with that I'm like unfamiliar with, and I end up painting something with sound that's like completely new.
Mm-hmm.
And and I'll post that, and then you know people will be like, oh, I hope this makes it onto the album, and I'll be like, oh, I guess I have to make a song out of it now. So it's like once I post it out there, I'm like, all right, I gotta finish it and make it into a song because I've promised people something. So
right.
It kind of helps me stay productive.
That's cool.
And it also, the tricky thing with that is I feel like a lot of people share this sentiment, is that it's tricky to have the discipline to flesh out a riff and transform it into a song. It's easy to just write riffs all day, but then it's hard to like actually make like a cohesive thing that from start to finish. So that's where like discipline and like me singing stuff comes into play. So I'll take a riff that I post onto Instagram. Maybe it'll be inspired by pedal, maybe it'll just be like a flashy thing. I'll just sing. Well, first I'll determine, what is this riff?
Okay.
So this sounds like a climax. This sounds like an intro. This sounds like a chorus section, or this sounds like the outro of something really epic. So I'll kind of decide where it belongs, and then I'll build around it. So, like, I'll kind of drone it. I will sometimes play a riff for 5 to 6 hours straight. Like, my whole day is just sitting there playing this one stupid riff. Like,
wow.
And, like, just meditating on it. And really, it's a really old-fashioned way of working. I don't write in a DAW. I don't use a Guitar Pro. I literally just play the riff until it's, like, internalized into my muscle memory. And in that sense, I'm writing a song well, practicing it at the same time. So I'm like knocking out two birds with one. I don't like that expression. Feeding two birds with one loaf of bread. Yeah. Like, but yeah, so it's like I'm getting my practice in, and by the end of that day, I'll have like an entire riff written, and I'll already know how to play it perfectly. It's like I can play it in my sleep, you know? Yes. So I'll do that, and then I'll build, like, I'll kind of sing how I want it, the section before to sound, and I'll figure out what connecting notes I should get. Sometimes I'll end up writing two disjointed riffs, and then I realize that they actually go together, and I'll just figure out a way to bridge them. And either I sing it or I take it to piano, which is an instrument I'm more familiar with than guitar because it's, like, my first instrument.
Right, okay.
So, like, if you're stuck on a riff, and like you don't know where to take it, try singing what you think should come and teach yourself that, or take it to another instrument. Like if you play saxophone, play it on saxophone, you know, like any other instrument. Sometimes it like takes you out of your mental block because it's like a completely different game. So I'll do that, and then I'll end up just like I actually have this board in my house where I'll have like names of songs, the parts I have written and parts that need to be completed. So it's like a super Silicon Valley way of dealing it with it, like post-it notes and like, you know, planning. But it also gives me a visual to see how complete an album is. Like, I can see, like, what's missing and what needs to be done just from this post-it note board. It's kind of like a very analytical, logical way to approach stuff, and it keeps me organized, and it keeps me disciplined to not write riffs forever.
It's analytical, but it's in conjunction with an organic way of doing it, which
yeah.
is kind of interesting because most people are either these days seemingly one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like we're all in, and, you know, in the DAW, we write everything beforehand, and that, you know, or we, you know, or we just recorded the bass idea and took it to the band and went with it. And this is like an in-between, seemingly, yeah, approach of it.
It came out of just a need for organization and a need to, like, keep myself focused. Because ever since I started doing music full-time, I needed a way to, like, treat it like a job. Okay. I mean, like, it shouldn't feel like a job, but you should treat your time like a job. Otherwise, I'll just be looking at cute bird videos on my Instagram all day and not really, like, working, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just kind of, I wake up and I look at the board. I'm like, all right, what do I tackle today? I need to figure out how to, I have this new song, Nero. Mm-hmm. It's, like, a more aggressive, like, also, like, I kind of, like, this, like, I view writing albums as, like, a body of work. So I don't want to write an album of the same song a billion times. Like, I want some variety. I want the whole album to, like, take you on an adventure sonically. I've determined that the new album has too much happy, like, posy sounding riffs in it, and it needs some, like, moodiness. So, like, I've been intentionally writing things with a little, like, you know, in kind of, like, minor keys, just because I feel like it needed a little bit of variety and it needs, like, some aggressiveness to it. So we have this new song called Nero, and it's, like, more, like, you know, I use a lot of fuzz on it. And it's just missing. I have the first three quarters of it, and it's missing a bridge to this last. You know that band Ocean Size?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I love Ocean Size. And that last riff is, like, super a la Ocean Size, but I just can't figure out for the life of me how to get from this section to that. So that's currently the most pressing issue on my board is, gotcha, how do I connect this? But I've been, like, humming it to myself every day. That's another way that, like, I work through problems. I just, like, keep on singing it, and then sometimes I'll get a breakthrough. Sometimes during sound check, I'll, like, be playing and, like, wait a minute, and then, like, it'll hit me at the weirdest time. So yeah, that's my I'm sorry, I'm talking so much. I'm just so excited to talk about this.
No, this is, yeah, wonderful. That's no, perfect, this is great for it. This,
yeah,
is, this is what it's all about.
Songwriting is my true passion. I love it.
That's awesome.
It's just so fun when you finally solve a problem, like when you figure out how to put that last connecting piece in it, and you step back and it's complete and it flows. It's like such a satisfying feeling. And then when you, yes, learn it and you play it for the first time with your band all the way through, and you hear what they add to it, like, that's amazing. I've so narcissistic. I've just been talking about myself. And then so I take the thing I've written and I bring it to my band, and they put their voices on it. And that's always a magical moment, because it's like, they'll hear stuff that I didn't hear. And then my drummer Forrest will put a beat on it that it just reframes the riff. Mm-hmm. It kind of, like, rephrases it so that it feels different than, like, how I intentionally wrote it. So sometimes it's, like, a fun way to, like, it, like, offsets the actual groove. So it's, like, a fun way to, like, vary it up. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's super fun. I think playing in a band is awesome.
It is awesome.
People ask me why I don't, because I write the songs, they ask me why I don't go solo, because there's, like, I don't want to just, like, reproduce with myself. Like, I want to, like, make something collaborative, and it's really fun, like, coming together with ideas. Even though, like, maybe, like, the songwriting process itself doesn't start collaboratively, it becomes collaborative when people put, like, the muscles and the,
yep,
meat and the fat on the skeleton. The guts.
Yeah. Get them in there.
Yeah, it's super fun.
Gotta have the guts.
So that's my process. Sorry for the long-winded answer.
Oh my gosh.
That's just what we needed.
Yeah, don't you dare ever talk on this podcast again. Yeah, I think we got through the bulk of the Facebook questions, actually.
Sweet.
Because we'd already talked
because I was
them.
A little blabbermouth and just talked about it.
That's perfect.
Hey, that's awesome.
It makes my job so much easier. Great. It's just like, so tell me. You know, the hardest part, though, is when people are like, when they say, I'm like, hey, yeah, so tell me about your rig. Like, well, I play a Strat. And
that's a wrap.
I'm like, that's it, huh? All
yeah.
right, okay.
Cool.
Tell me about your mother, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, one thing I wanted to say, I think it's important to say, is that, like, I guess, like, I want to talk about a struggle that I had, like, initially with, like, Instagram posting riffs and songwriting.
Yeah, please do.
I feel
Absolutely.
Like, again, Instagram is a place where I feel like I kind of, initially, I kind of burst onto the scene, like, you know, this technical tapper person, and mm-hmm. I felt like I had to live up to that all the time, and I started writing because I felt like I had to just be flashy and impress people. I'm like, you know, because people knew me as, like, this flashy tapper person, And, you know, I kind of pigeonholed myself in a category where it's just, like, very technical. People, like, would describe me as technical. But it's weird. I felt like I was, like, having an identity crisis because I was like, yeah, I guess what I do is technical. But, like, that's not where my heart is. Like, remember you asked me earlier. You were like, you know, some people care about technicality. Some people care about tone.
Yeah.
I actually feel like my heart's more in the tone category. Like, I care more about emotiveness and, like, you know, painting a picture with music. But I feel like I was put in this category, and it's a cool category to be in because it, like, it's tension grabbing. But I started writing to, like, appease people from that category, and I felt like it wasn't true to me. So, you know, for a while I kind of felt like I would only post flashy stuff on Instagram. And what really helped me was starting to experiment with, like, this is when I didn't even really use pedals. Like, I'm really new to the whole, like, Stompbox pedal game. And so when I started demoing pedals more, I realized that, like, some of these effects actually sound incredible if you just let the effect do the work. You don't need to play something flashy. Like, it's actually better if you lay back and you let it breathe. Like, a delay, for instance, like, if you play something really notey, you're not going to appreciate the decay. Like, if you just do, like, long drawn-out chords, like, you know, more ambient stuff, you can really appreciate what it does. So I started thinking about music super differently, and I started writing less for flashiness and more for musicality. And so I think if you're ever in a rut, and I would get in, like, I would get stuck with songwriting because I was like, this isn't flashy enough, so no one's gonna like it because it's not, like, impressive. But then I had to check myself. I was like, who cares? Like, music is, I'm not here to, like, wow you with my finger acrobatics. Like, I'd rather write something that's a memorable melody that you're gonna hum, that you're gonna, like, want to hear. You know. So I feel like that really cleared my writer's block a lot when I stopped caring about flashiness and I just cared more about what served the song.
I can relate to you in a strange way because I've, you know, Instagram's like my main kind of social channel too, and it's where I, in the place on the internet I enjoy the most and whatever. But it was a long, I was posting pictures of all these pedals for a long time because I'm a pedal hoarding maniac.
And so
I'm just like, people are like, show me what it sounds like. And I'm like, there's other demos you can search for. Go look for those because you don't want to hear mine, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until this year when I started being like, whatever, I've seen so many bad demos. Like, I'm not going to be worse than that, you know? And just finally starting to put it out there. And it's like, oh, okay, people like that too. I don't have to be, I can just be me. I don't have to be what I thought I needed to be.
Absolutely.
You know? So I totally relate to that. It's just like, because I was like, when I put out a demo, it's going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be.
My rule for posting something is if I am genuinely excited about it, I'll post it. Like, perfect. I don't care what the perception of me is going to be. Like, if it's like, boo, do something, like, more flashy, like, whatever, go listen to Rings of Saturn or something.
Right.
Like,
you know,
like, this is not the point of, like, that's not the point of what I'm doing. Like, I feel like just to be authentic and to be actually excited about what you do, that translates way more, and that's, like, way more important than, like, anything else.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. There's plenty of, I mean, not to put anybody down, but there's plenty of robo-shredders that people don't really care about that much. It's like, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
And I need to go get a sandwich now.
Yeah. I find that those people do great when visually, but then it's like you look at, again, not knocking it, because I think it's very impressive.
Yes.
I wish I had an iota of technicality that these people had. But, like, you look at their streaming numbers and stuff, and it's like not, people don't actually, like, listen to it. It's more like a, wow, that's, like, really visually cool.
Mm-hmm. But it's a presentation in and of itself, which is fantastic. But, yeah, it's, I find what's impressive sometimes doesn't translate into, what am I going to queue up?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just more like, what do I want to listen to?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it is.
Most of the time it's not, though. I mean, for me.
Not to mention, sometimes the tone is just so grating. It's, like, difficult to listen to.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish, like, this is less trebly and harsh.
like what you were talking about earlier with, like, the EMGs and active pickups and stuff. A lot of those guys use that style of pickup and that setup, and if it's not what you're into, then it's just not what you're into.
Yeah, it's gonna be hard for your ears.
I like single coils, and, you know, sometimes humbuckers, but
usually
single coils.
Yeah, usually single coils.
So that's what I kind of gravitate more to when I'm listening to music too.
Yeah, definitely. It's all taste. It's all preference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all subjective. At the end of the day, my opinion doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So
yeah. At the end of the day, none of anything we just said means anything.
That's true.
That's very
What's
true.
It all mean anyway? What are we doing here?
Nothing matters.
You guys
just want to get deep.
You guys ever wonder about when the singularity is going to happen?
Yeah.
We can go there. No, we've taken a lot of your time already, so I'm sure there's people who are more exciting to talk to outside.
I'm so stoked to talk about all this. It's just so fun for me. I don't know, like, I feel like sometimes talking and having a discussion about this stuff helps me understand myself better. Yeah. It helps me be more deliberate about what I do. Like, putting it out there in words, like, it's cool. It's like a learning experience for me.
It's a weird thing, you know. I'm, you know, just doing this show has inadvertently showed me things about myself where I don't really like listening to it because, you know, your own voice, everybody knows that. But I still have to because I have to edit it. And sometimes I look back and I'm like, oh, I said that. Why did I say that? That's not what I meant.
Am I actually an idiot?
I'm like, oh, I didn't mean to say it like that. I sounded so bad or sounded so judgmental or I sounded so whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's made me a lot more deliberate with what I say. Jess knows, he's been one of my best friends for years.
Yeah,
I'm just that guy who would just spout off things.
Oh yeah,
and nobody likes that guy. And doing this show helped me like not be that guy.
Absolutely,
it's like you don't need to just say whatever comes into your head. It's not always right.
it's crazy. Like doing this job, one of the things that has changed about me the most is I feel like, you know, you think you understand everything at first, and then it's like the more you do something, the more you see people killing it and like excelling at their craft, and the more you like see the big wide world out there, the more you realize you don't know anything.
Yes.
So it's better to like, I don't know, like just I feel like I'd rather like learn something than like just tell someone how to do something. I don't know anything.
It's kind of humbling.
Yes.
Yeah, it is super humbling.
That's a way better feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should get into the last two questions of the night and let you get on with everything and enjoy the rest of the concert, and we'll stop fogging up your van.
Yeah, no worries. People out there think something weird's going to happen.
Yeah. It's Portland, actually. Dude, they don't think anything of it. This is totally normal.
Titanic handprint on.
Oh, there you go.
So this one's a little bit more fitting with the rest of the podcast, but. And maybe you don't have an answer to this because you mentioned how you were a little bit new to pedals. But do you have a favorite Boss pedal?
You know, I haven't had enough experience with Boss gear. I've used one and I borrowed it from my bass player. It was that, okay, it's like a number again.
Oh yeah,
like
that's just where it gets, confusing.
Okay, so it's the one, it's a chorus pedal that has four buttons.
Which one is that?
It's the Dimension.
Dimension.
Oh, Dimension.
Dimension
C.
Yeah,
Dimension
C.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
I kept wanting to say the CE too. Like, no.
Yeah, that one's cool. I like it. It's it's simple. It's a cool, like, you know, foolproof.
Yeah, there you go.
Four buttons. You choose whichever setting you like.
Yeah, which one sounds good to you.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a really great pedal. I mean, kind of, they picked the right settings in between. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's great for if you just want chorus on a fly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Boom. Yep. All right, next question's a little more serious. And this one's, it's sensitive.
Could be detrimental. To,
yeah.
Okay, uh-oh.
What kind of pizza do you like?
Oh, man. Okay. I really love mushroom olive, and I love garlic. I'm like, proof I'm not a vampire, I will like eat an entire clove of garlic. I will shove garlic in every orifice possible. Like, I just love garlic, and I love pizza with a lot of garlic butter. I love olives as well, mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And thin crust. Thin crust, I want to eat bread. If I want to eat bread, I would just eat bread.
Right.
I want pizza.
Yes.
Pizza. Oh, no, like not that kind of pizza. What'd I say, though?
No, how dare you?
Oh, I just used the little Caesar slogan accidentally.
Caesars.
What kind of pizza do you guys like?
That gets thrown back at me a lot. I tend to go for like a New York style slice these days. Mm-hmm. I like the thin crust. Portland does have a few options in that category around, and they're pretty good.
You're kind of making me want pizza.
It's pretty good pizza. I can point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
Oof. I heard sizzle pie's nice.
Sizzle pie's pretty nice.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not probably my favorite New York style slice around here. It's got to go to Checkerboard or Scotty's.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But Sizzle Pie is solid. It's a really good.
It's a good slice.
It's a good slice.
If there's one around and you're like, hey, I want some pizza, it's a good place to mm-hmm. go.
So yeah, I tend to go for that or like the Italian wood fired thing.
Okay.
I like those are my two favorite styles.
All right, unpopular opinion. This is gonna probably make people upset, but there's something really nostalgic for me about like frozen oven pizza,
like
literally you get it for $1.
Like Totino's.
Totino's. Yeah. It's disgusting, mm-hmm. but there's something about that sauce that I just can't.
I know
that other places don't replicate. Yeah. It has like this nostalgia. Like when I eat it, it just takes me back to like.
I'm a kid again.
Like I'm a child.
Yes.
Like mm-hmm. it's comforting, and I love that. I will mm-hmm. eat frozen pizza for days.
I'm with you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I understand that.
Good.
if this makes you feel any better, when we recorded our album, one of the things that we did during the recording was we brought a pellet smoker over to the studio.
Ooh.
And because we're monsters, we put Totino's pizzas on them and smoked the Totino's pizzas.
And, yeah. But not only that, we put like...
Oh, we did put
was
some,
it sausage or chorizo?
I can't remember.
I know it's basically the same, but
we put
different.
Some fancy sausage or something on it.
Yeah,
but,
on top. And,
but it was on a Totino's, and I felt like there was something punk rock about that while we were recording an album that wasn't really punk rock at all. But it was fine.
I love you can dress it up however you like.
Oh, yeah.
You can make that thing, you know, super fancy. Mm-hmm. Get some. I'm vegetarian, so mm-hmm. I love soy riso
mm-hmm.
and
okay.
like soy bacon crumbles and yeah. stuff. So you like put all this. Stuff on it, and then mm-hmm. you forget you're eating dollar pizza. Yeah,
throw some green peppers on there.
And I'm going to relate this to gear really quick.
Okay.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Okay, all right. And it goes to show that sometimes price doesn't matter. Like
That's
sometimes
true.
Cheaper things mm-hmm. satisfy you just as good as something mm-hmm. expensive. Sometimes it suits your needs better, so you should ignore the price tag.
And
That's right.
Just go with it.
Just go with what you like.
Your taste.
It's like...
Your taste.
There you go. Back to the whole thing.
Yeah. There we go.
I went and did something crazy and collected the Ibanez Tone Lock series.
This is the 7
and
series,
They're all, you know, fairly cheap. But the vast majority of them sound awesome.
Oh, yeah. Those gray ones.
The gray ones. They don't look that great.
They push in. The buttons push in on them. They're like, oh, we're getting knocked on the door. Oh. Maybe that's mm-hmm. our sign to wrap this up.
Maybe. It's about that time, anyway.
Hello.
Is Forrest in here?
No. He's not.
Okay.
I don't know where he is. We're in recording a podcast. Yes.
Sorry for interrupting.
No worries. This makes it cool. Maybe that's our cue. What do you think?
Could be.
Yeah.
All right.
That's cool that you collected all of that.
Well, it's kind of dumb because, you know, I'm just a nerd, so.
Nerds are cool.
But
I think.
But seriously, if you want something cheap that sounds really good, look into that series.
Yep.
My first guitar was an SX Tele Clone. It's a $90 guitar.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't afford a guitar, so mm-hmm. I traded a drum machine for it, and it served me well. Like I played it for like years, mm-hmm. and it just had Bill Lawrence pickups in it,
mm-hmm.
which like you know they're awesome, hand wound, really. Cool character in those pickups, but it's $90.
Yeah, the SXs, I've played them. They
That's
work.
Awesome.
They're totally good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, I could sit here all night, but I don't feel like that would
Me
be.
Me too. Yeah. Sorry. Nice. I guess we got a bunch of nerds together, and this is what happens.
Yeah. This is what happens every time.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, I'd love to.
That'd
Hopefully,
be great.
I learn something new and I can contribute.
More. This was a really fun conversation. Thank you so much. This was a crazy night, and I'm so glad it worked out.
Me too.
Me too.
Now I want pizza.
Oh, yeah. I think they serve some
really?
They do. They got some slices in there.
Gosh.
I think so. And it's Portland, so I'm sure there's something for you in there if need be.
I'm going to eat a lot.
Or I can point you in the direction of some good spots. But
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
We'll go ahead and wrap this thing up. So, for everyone... This is Blake, and as always, folks, good luck and good tones. Good. This is great.
All right. There we go. Another one in the books. Thank you for coming on that adventure with me. That was a fun night, and I'm glad that it's kind of been preserved in a way. You know, that doesn't always happen. You don't get to document things quite as closely as we did there. But that was a really fun conversation. She's an incredible player. Please go check out the band if you haven't. I'm kind of obsessed with them right now. They're just, everyone in the band is amazing. And yeah, if this was a good episode for you, share it with a friend. You could tell your friends, your family, your coworkers, your guy at the guitar store, whoever it may be. If this show is something you enjoy on a weekly basis, the best way you can keep it coming is by sharing it with a friend. So please do so, and I hope to talk to you next week. Goodbye. One last thing before we totally sign off here. I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville, that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company, and I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy and check them out today. I seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things, and by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple, and his customer service is top-notch, and I can't say enough good things about Gun Street as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got 3 different guitars that now have Gun Street harnesses in them, and I could not be happier. So go to GunStreetWiringShop.com and check them out.